listening to New England Public Radio News, and this is the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And with us today, Kristen Palpini, reporter with the Berkshire Eagle, and Susan Bigelow, columnist with CT News Junkie. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
There are changes to the longtime alternative publication, The Valley Advocate. In a cost-cutting move, The Advocate will now be supervised by the Daily Hampshire Gazette's arts and culture editor. The Gazette and Advocate have the same owner, and new Gazette editor-in-chief Brooke Hauser says The Advocate will still have an independent voice.
I think that the Gazette has an independent voice. It's not the alternative voice, but it's still a small, family-owned business.
The Advocate had been a weekly paper before recently shifting to every 2 weeks. To put it right out there, Kristen, of course, is a former Advocate editor and Gazette writer. So what are your thoughts about all of this?
Oh, I have so many thoughts about all this, so many thoughts and feelings. But I guess my primary one is happiness that Brooke Hauser is their new editor-in-chief over there. I got to work with her a little bit while I was the Advocate editor. And she was over at the Gazette. And she just has a really, she kind of has like an alternative opinion of how news should be covered anyway. So, I mean, that's really exciting. But the Advocate coming under the Gazette's oversight, that's disappointing. I know it had been kind of moving that way for a couple of years, a desire to marry the two. And for budget reasons, it had to happen. But I just, how can the Advocate be the Advocate when it's the Gazette?
Susan, is this a sign of the times as a whole for print media and especially alternative publications?
It might be, unfortunately. Certainly in Connecticut, we used to have a lot of alternative publications, most of which were bought by the Tribune Corporation, which also owns the Hartford Courant. And now they've just been sort of folded into the Courant and are a site called ctnow.com and have lost pretty much anything that made them special. So it really is very sad and it's worrisome.
Tuesday is primary election day in Connecticut and Vermont. In both states, there are gubernatorial races before voters. Let's start with Connecticut, where Governor Daniel Malloy is not seeking re-election. On the Democratic side, Greenwich businessman Ned Lamont is taking on Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim. Ganim was convicted of felony corruption charges during his first stint as Bridgeport's mayor in the 90s. Susan, how do you see this race ending up, and how much of a hindrance is that conviction to Ganim?
Well, it didn't stop Bridgeport voters from electing him as mayor again, which was a real head-scratcher for a lot of us who watch politics. But there you go. They were willing to give him a second chance. I do think that it doesn't play well with most Democratic primary voters who seem fairly scared that he'll be the nominee and then lose big time to a Republican. Ned Lamont is not necessarily the most exciting candidate in the world. He has a lot of respect among Democrats and progressives for running against Joe Lieberman in the primary in 2006, but he's not generating that same kind of excitement this time around. He should be able to win, but we're looking at the margins.
And on the Republican side, there's five candidates looking to move on to November. The GOP endorsed Danbury Mayor Mark Boughton at its convention this summer. In a recent debate, one big issue was how to handle Hartford's debt, and there were differing opinions there. Susan, what about this one?
So Hartford, of course, has a lot of financial problems, as do many Connecticut cities. Hartford very nearly had to declare bankruptcy this past year, and the state bailed them out. They are paying for a lot of their long-term debt, and this is very, very unpopular. So the question is, should Hartford do something else to take care of their finances, or should the state bail them out? And that's something that Republicans are very, very conflicted about.
Kristen, any thoughts about what's going on in Connecticut?
Just kind of an overall thought. I think it's interesting that the governor who's, I think, the least popular in the United States has a state right next to the governor who is the most popular in the United States, Baker. It's got like this little, we're so close, yet so far away.
Meanwhile, in Vermont, incumbent Republican Phil Scott is facing a challenger in the gubernatorial primary there, and there's four Democrats looking to earn their party's nomination, including a 14-year-old. His name is Ethan Sonneborn, and Vermont has no age requirement for governor. And Vermont Public Radio's Peter Hirschfeld told me that Sonneborn took advantage of that.
Ethan Sonneborn says he thinks that the framers of the Vermont Constitution were well aware of the fact that other states had included those age requirements, but decided they wanted to let the voters be the ones who decide whether or not somebody is fit for office. And if that means the 14-year-old is the best candidate, then so be it.
Kristen, how about young Mr. Sonneborn, who can't even vote for himself or even legally drive a car running for governor?
Well, I think it's really exciting to see somebody so young, so into politics. And I mean, he's got his campaign staff. He's preparing for debates. It's very impressive. He shouldn't be governor at all. You know, there's a level of maturity you need to reach and a level of understanding of just how money and people and life works that you need to get there. But he's shaking it up and he's getting young people to pay attention. And that's awesome.
Susan, do Vermont lawmakers need to close this loophole?
No, I don't think so. Certainly, the young people have been elected as mayors before, 18 years old, 21 years old. There was a case in Connecticut where Ryan Bingham, I think he was 20, 21, was elected the mayor of Torrington, a city in Connecticut. So I don't think it needs to be closed. I think that this encourages participation. This is actually very cool.
And we are all, as we're talking about all these important elections going on, they're taking place at a time of year when a lot of people are on vacation. And Massachusetts grappled with this very question, when to have its primaries. And this year decided on Tuesday, September 4th, which happens to be the day after Labor Day. And that, of course, is when many people are coming back from a three-day weekend. Susan, is this a problem, having primaries in late summer like this?
No, I don't think so. I think you could hold the primary whenever you want to hold it, and turnout is still going to be low. That's just the nature of primaries. You could hold it in September. You could hold it in August. Connecticut, we used to have our primaries in September a long time ago, and turnout was still low. And in August, yep, it's still low. People who want to vote, they're going to vote. People who don't care, don't care.
Kristen, do we need to rework the election calendar?
I tend to agree about the primaries. You know, if it was a full-on election, I'd have a problem with it. But as far as a primary or a special election or something like that, you're going to get what you're going to get. The people who are jazzed are going to show up anyway.
All right. Kristen Palpini of the Berkshire Eagle and Susan Bigelow of CT News Junkie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch us at any time wherever you get your podcasts or at nepr.net/podcast. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio. Thank you.